You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three.
Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. He comes in, touches.
And across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, and entertaining. I'm your host, James Marcina, a.k.a. Maury Popovich. You may know me as NBA Injury Report on Twitter, and this is episode 326. Woo! That's a lot of sodes. Today's sode is a very special one. It's our first ever voicemail bag. I asked you guys to call up 929-377-5103 and leave me some questions via voicemail. And you came through. I want more questions for next time. Basically, everyone who submitted a question got onto this episode. But hey, use that as motivation. You're so close to having your voice played on a Locked On Knicksode. It's a dream come true for many of us, I'm sure, right? So get in on the action. But you will never have the glory attached to your name that these first four brave souls will, who submitted questions for today's voicemail bag. We will answer questions such as, what's better, signing free agents or building your team through the draft? What's going to happen with Joakim Noah this season? Should Amari Stoudemire be brought back on a one-year minimum contract? And why should you sous vide anything at all? These questions, and maybe more, will be answered on the first ever Locked On Knicks voicemail bag. All right, enough messing around. Let's start the show. Hit it, Marv.
Yes.
Hey, what's up, man? It's Shane Stanzoni over here. And I just wanted to get your take on this, dude. I was just thinking, would you rather, you know, everyone's saying that we got Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Jimmy Butler. You know, we got all these guys coming over here in the next couple of years. They're going to win some championships and all that, you know, all that good stuff. So say that all happens. Say it. Say we win two championships. But then what if all those guys leave us and they want to go do it somewhere else? Now say, would you rather that or we just keep our young guys together, build from the inside out, and maybe we get lucky and get a couple of draft picks like Golden State turned out to be, and then we will be the best team for the next 10 years. What's your take on this, dude?
Thank you for the question, James. I didn't quite catch that last name. Was it D'Antoni? Is this a member of the D'Antoni family listening to Locked On Knicks? Who knows? We'll perhaps never know. But I've seen some version of this question floating around the internet for a little while now. Right? The way James phrased it was two championships from a Kevin Durant, from a Kyrie Irving, but then maybe they leave, go somewhere else, a la LeBron James, want to try out something different, right? Or do you want to keep your young guys and then dominate for 10 years or maybe more with homegrown talent? And there is a school of thought that's like, you know what? I don't want these mercenaries to come in here, get a couple championships for the resume, and then leave. And I get it. I mean, it's much more satisfying to win with homegrown talent than it is with free agents. There's no question about that. I speak from some experience in this regard as a Yankee fan, which is pretty much my only experience with a winning franchise. You know, I grew up through that late 90s, early 2000s dynasty, and it always felt better rooting for the homegrown guys. You felt much more attached to them. Your Jeters, your Riveras, your Pettits and Posadas. And, you know, A-Rod was annoying, so you almost just throw that out. He would be annoying no matter what. If you grew up, if he was drafted by your team free agents, you know, A-Rod was his own thing. But the other guys, they don't feel quite as much like they're yours, no matter who they are. The Wade Boggses, the David Justices, the Cecil Fielders. However, If you can sign a Kevin Durant, or if you can sign a Kyrie Irving in free agency, without giving up anything as far as draft picks or young players, but you just sign them in free agency, you got to do it. You got to do it. Now, some people will say this is an insane position to take, but I personally would not want a LeBron at this stage in his career. For one thing, I think you start giving away youth for established players if you bring in a LeBron, you know, the Kyle Korvers of the world, because you got to fit things on LeBron's timeline. LeBron is LeBron, and not only that, he's played almost 45,000 minutes. I'm going to say that one more time. LeBron has played just short of 45,000 minutes. Woo! I know he's a Terminator robot sent from the future to destroy us all, and he'll never break down, but he is going to break down eventually. And if you sign with the Knicks, you know, I hate to be the pessimistic Knicks guy, but you just know if you sign with the Knicks, it would be, you know, maybe you get one good year out of him, and then he's cooked. You know that would happen, and you'd be stuck with like three more years of a $40 million contract, whatever it is. Luckily, he's with the Lakers now as he heads into his golden year, so I think we've dodged that bullet, so to speak, and it's going to be fine. But when you talk about a Kevin Durant or a Kyrie Irving, they're both young enough where they've got lots of prime left, so you're not really too worried about that. Anyone could get injured. You know, that's true. Kyrie has a little bit of an injury history more than Durant does. Durant's a little bit older. But these guys don't seem like they're breaking down anytime soon to me. And if you sign them in free agency and you don't give away every single asset you have to trade for them, you know, a la a Melo trade or, dare I speak his name, a Bargnani trade, then in my opinion, you got to do it. If they win two titles for the Knicks and then leave, like, yeah, the leaving's not going to feel great. Those two titles, though. Shit, give me one. You know what I mean? It'll feel plenty good in the moment, and most likely for the rest of your life, if Kevin Durant brings the title to New York. You know, this isn't like KD joining the 73-win Warriors. This is a very different situation, and it's not going to feel cheap. The Knicks, let's face it, have been a trash franchise for the better part of two decades now, right? Looks like they're turning things around now, of course. I've said that many times on the show. But if they win, if the Knicks win, if this Knicks franchise wins a championship, even with Kevin Durant as a rental, trust me, it's going to feel like you dragged your ass up Mount Everest wearing like a backpack full of bricks. It's not going to feel easy. It's not going to feel like a cheat code the way it did when he joined an already championship caliber squad in Golden State. You know, maybe it won't be quite as satisfying as KP being the one that takes us there, but it'll be very satisfying. My only worry would be trying to accelerate everything and trading a guy like Knox in order to accelerate that process of building the Knicks into a championship contender. But I'm hopeful that if one of these guys signs, if one of these guys comes over as a free agent, it'll be with the knowledge of what the Knicks are trying to do, which in Perry's words is build a sustainable winner. And that's the key word, a sustainable winner. You do that by developing youth and getting surplus value on contracts. I hate that you have to think this way. I'm extremely pro-labor. Wokest Knicks podcast in the world. Everyone says that about this podcast, right? But it's what you got to do in the NBA. You got to get surplus value on contracts. And it's easiest to do that with guys on their rookie deals. You sign a bunch of free agents. Maybe they live up to these massive contracts, and hopefully they do. But they're probably not going to provide you with surplus value. And that's the key. So, yeah, you know, the dream scenario for me, personally speaking, if you'll allow me such an indulgence, is to build strictly through the draft. It's to hit a home run with Knox, to hit a home run with Mitchell, you know, and go on a Golden State-like tear through the league for the next decade. But if Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving want to come here in free agency and don't want to force us to trade for the kids, I mean, I'm all for it. I'm all for it. Want to get on to our next voicemail bag question. But before I do that, just want to remind you that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I have a quick question. What are we going to do with Joakim Noah? Do you think he gets a chance under Fizdale, or are we just stretching?
Thank you for the question, whoever you are. I know this is the first time that you guys are doing this, but feel free to leave your name, where you're from. In fact, please do, if you can remember to. All right, Let's tackle the question, though. What are the Knicks going to do about Joakim Noah? Will he get a fair shake under Fizdale, or will the Knicks stretch him? And I'll say this. You never know what a franchise is going to do. You never know. You know, maybe Perry wakes up on the wrong side of the bed and becomes a pile of trash and starts doing wild shit, like stretching Noah today, right? But I don't think that's going to happen, and I'll tell you what I want to see. I want to see Joakim Noah get a fair shake. I think if the Knicks know what they're doing, they'll try to get him on the court. Let him compete. Let him at least compete in practice and see what he brings. That's how you set a culture. That's one of the ways you set a culture. He's under contract, right? Let him compete. If he earns minutes, he earns minutes, right? And then the players respect the coach. Now, you still have other things that are a priority than playing Joakim Noah, and that's player development, right? So is Joakim Noah going to take minutes away from some of the young guys who need them? And this is where Fizdale comes in. Even if Joakim comes out and plays his ass off and looks great, which I'll get to that in a moment. If you're Fizdale, you got to tell him very clearly, very honestly, that you're still trying to develop the young guys. So assuming that the young guys don't look awful in practice in the preseason and in their minutes, you know, during actual games when the season starts, assuming they're not awful, you got to tell Joakim, look, we're trying to get minutes for Robinson. We're trying to get minutes for Cornette. They're young. They're part of the future. We need to develop them. That's the coach's job. It's to communicate and to be clear with these guys what their roles are. And if Fizdale is half the communicator that it seems like he is, that we're told he is, that it looks like he is from all available evidence, he should be able to get through to Joakim and let him know what's up. And honestly, let's face it. Like, I don't think he's in danger of tearing it up so badly that he makes it weird that he's not being played. I don't want to be mean about it, but I think he's washed, right? I do know this. Stretching Joakim Noah before the season starts is a terrible idea. A terrible idea. Under no circumstances, should his contract be stretched unless you know for a fact that another free agent wants to sign with the team. And even then, I don't love it. You know, stars don't stay with teams anymore. They leave constantly. We've seen this over and over again. I know Kyrie is great, for instance. But someone else, great, is going to be available the next year and the year after that. This isn't going to stop anytime soon. Maybe the collective bargaining agreement changes and players stop bouncing around from team to team. But right now, the way things are set up, there's always going to be another excellent player available. That's my opinion. All right? So there's a case to be made that you shouldn't stretch Joakim Noah, even if you have a commitment from a top star in the upcoming offseason after the 2018-19 season. I mean, that's $7 million per year that you're going to wind up paying for the next 3 years. That can get you a pretty good player. You know, we've seen what happened this offseason. Kyle Quinn signed for a little over $4 million. Wouldn't you want a player who's twice as good as Joakim Noah as a glue guy filling in the cracks during this, you know, march toward a championship? I would. But I'll say this. If someone completely game-changing, like a healthy Kawhi Leonard or a Kevin Durant, becomes available this upcoming offseason, and you got to stretch Noah to do it, you hold your nose. I know it smells bad, but you hold your nose and you pull the trigger. I'm actually less convinced by a Kyrie Irving. I'm less convinced that you stretch Noah for Kyrie. I'll just say this. Kyrie Irving is extremely talented. It would be so much fun to root for him. I think he would light up Madison Square Garden. I think he would relish being on that stage. I think he'd cherish it. I think we would just fall in love with him, right, if he came to the Knicks. And he did hit one of the ballsiest shots ever in one of the highest pressure situations ever in the history of the NBA. Game 7 in Golden State against the winningest regular season team of all time, right? So there are a lot of things to like about Kyrie Irving. I get it. Here's my reservation. He did that against Golden State. He hit that shot. He's got the balls, right? He's got the huevos. There's no denying it. But he took down that team with LeBron James, who had a lot to do with it, right? Let's look at this past year Celtics team. Look what they did without him, right? I know he's a great player. I know this. But I'm not 100% convinced that he's the guy who by himself elevates a team. He could be. He could be that guy. I'm not saying he's not that guy, but I'm not 100% convinced. And what it really comes down to for me is his suspect defense. Now, I'm told that his defense was a lot better this past year before he got hurt, but I haven't watched him enough personally to feel confident in that. If you're going to stretch a Joakim Noah, I think you want a legitimate two-way star. That's all I'm saying. And I'm not fully convinced that Kyrie is that guy. But under no circumstances should you stretch him before the season starts, before you have a commitment from someone else that you know is going to come and play for the Knicks as a free agent, and you need that money from him. If he's that much of a problem in the locker room, make it his problem. You know, fine him, sit him, make him, you know, go through the system to try to get that money back. But you don't stretch him because you're worried about him ruining the culture. To me, that would be a big mistake. All right, time for our next question. But before we get to that, I just want to remind you that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, James, this is Neil, the New York Knicks fan from Maine. Now, you wrote it off before, but I'm telling you, we bring back Amari Stoudemire, who wants a comeback, sign him to a one-year minimum deal, and we just put him there next to Mitchell Robinson so that he can be like, no, man, you can dunk on those big guys. Just dunk it like I used to. And he makes him the new Stoudemire, hopefully with healthy knees. Anyway, thanks.
All right, Neil. Listen up, Neil. You can't even get through that question without sounding like you want to laugh. It sounds like you want to laugh. Right? Am I supposed to take this seriously, Neil? If I am, here's how I will answer your question. I'm just not a huge Amare guy. Not a big Amare guy. Punching the fire extinguisher when we needed him most against the Heat of all teams is just an unforgivable sin for me. And he did that while he was a veteran. If you haven't read this book, Neil, you should read 7 Seconds or Less about D'Antoni's sons. It doesn't paint Amari Stoudemire as like a monster or anything. Hold on, I gotta sip some coffee. I'm a little parched. It doesn't paint Amari Stoudemire as a monster, but he doesn't sound like the kind of guy who's gonna provide you with solid veteran leadership. He seems mercurial at best, is what I'll say. If you want someone telling Mitchell Robinson to yam it on fools, which I understand, you know, he might need that advice. I think Fizdale should be able to adequately gas him up, tell him he's Wilt Chamberlain or whatever, you know, he does. Alternatively, I would love a Vince Carter. He seems super smart, obviously a very aggressive player at his peak, and he can end entire careers with a single dunk. So that's someone who I want around, young Mitchell Robinson. But Amari Stoudemire, and like this veteran leader role, I don't know. He's still out here making dumb comments in 2017. Once again, wokest podcast in all of sports podcasting. I gotta bring this up. Last year, 2017, he told this Israeli news outlet, Wallace Sport, when asked about the possibility of having a gay teammate, he said, "I'm going to shower across the street, make sure my change of clothes are around the corner." When asked if he was joking, he responded, "There's always a truth within a joke." So, to that I say, just get this guy out the paint. I don't want him around the young guys. Look, we all make mistakes. Maybe he feels bad about what he said. Maybe he doesn't really mean it. You know people who think they're funny but aren't. They make bad jokes all the time. Maybe he thought he was doing that. You know, maybe you think I'm someone who thinks I'm funny but not. And I make bad jokes all the time. You know what I mean? So, like, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. I'm not saying I want to shame him out of making a living or anything. But he's out here in 2017 making a "I don't want a gay teammate" joke. Let's give him that benefit of the doubt, right? I don't trust his judgment. I want someone classier than Amari Stoudemire and young Mitchell Robinson's ear. You know, Mitchell Robinson skipped college, pulled out of the draft combine. He's got enough bad advice in the past. He needs less Amari, more Jared Jack. That's what I'm saying, all right? Here is our final voicemail bag question for today's show. All right.
Jimmy. Hey, brother. First time listener, long time caller. Curious, why should I sous vide anything at all? Just curious. I'll take my answer off to you.
Why sous vide anything at all? I can answer that question. What it really comes down to is cooking something to the perfect temperature. The perfect temperature. When you talk about meat, for instance, fish, whatever, it's done, you know, the old school thing is you touch the steak, and if it feels like your ear, then it's medium rare. If it feels like your nose, then it's medium well, whatever. What really is going on is when it gets to a certain temperature, it's a certain doneness. That's how things cook. They reach a certain internal temperature, and then they're either medium rare, or they're medium, or they're well done, whatever. It's all about what temperature it reaches. So what a sous vide machine does is it takes a huge pot of water, however big a pot you got, and it cooks that water to a precise temperature. Let's say you want a nice medium rare steak around 130 degrees. You set your sous vide to 130. You put the steak in a plastic bag. You get rid of the air. You put that bag into the sous vide bath at 130 degrees. You cook it for an hour or two, whatever the, you know, recommended cooking time is. And then it cooks it to that temperature, but not over. See, if you cook something in a pan or in an oven, there's a risk of going over because you're cooking it at a heat that's higher than the internal temperature that you want the meat to reach. But the sous vide bath is exactly the temperature you want the meat to reach. There's a danger of cooking it for too long and breaking down, you know, the meat itself in a way that you don't like. So don't keep your steak in the sous vide for like three straight days. That's not a good idea. But for a couple of hours, it's never going to get above the temperature you want it to cook at. So the idea is that you cook something to the perfect temperature with sous vide. If you want to cook a steak, it's going to be that perfect level of doneness all the way through. If you cook steak over fire, there's a danger that that gray ring that's, you know, when you cut open a steak that you see, goes further and further into the meat, and then that part that's gray is not cooked perfectly like the pink part. With sous vide, it's pink all the way through. Now, what you got to remember is that you got to sear the meat afterward, because there's a lot of flavor that comes from searing meat, and you don't get that with sous vide. Quickly, searing meat gives you something known as, in French, the Maillard reaction. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, because I never took French. I'm not, you know, I took Spanish, come on. I don't run into French people all the day. Now in, like, Williamsburg you do, right? But, like, growing up in New Jersey, I ran into people who spoke Spanish. So I took Spanish like a responsible human being. But anyway, the Maillard reaction, via Wikipedia, it's a chemical reaction between amino acids and reducing sugars that gives browned food its distinctive flavor. Put another way, via Sirius Eats, the Maillard reaction is many small, simultaneous chemical reactions that occur when proteins and sugars in and on your food are transformed by heat, producing new flavors, aromas, and colors. Basically, seared steaks, bread that is brown in the crust, when coffee is roasted, this is all the Maillard reaction. And it gives you delicious flavor, and you miss out on that if you sous vide stuff. So that's why you gotta sear it at the end. Sous vide is also great for fish or shrimp. You know how easy it is to overcook fish or shrimp, but you literally cannot overcook it with sous vide. Chicken, another great use case for sous vide. Now, I love a roast chicken. I'm great at making roast chicken if I do say so myself. But that can be kind of a pain in the ass sometimes. Sometimes you don't want to cook a whole chicken either. So you throw in a couple of chicken breasts into a sous vide. You might be like, eh, chicken breast is dry. No, it's not. Not if you roast it perfectly, not if you sous vide it. It's not dry even a little bit. It's succulent. It's full of flavor. And then you turn that chicken into some chicken salad. Or you shred it and you make enchiladas. You use your imagination. Now look, with enough practice, you can cook anything you want without using sous vide. And you know, there is something that feels a little bit more right about cooking with fire than cooking with a plastic bag and a temperature-controlled bucket of water. I get that. But sous vide is fun. It's fun. It's like the difference between winning with homegrown talent, bringing it all back, and winning with a free agent. So if you win with homegrown talent, if you win a championship with Kristaps Porzingis, it's like cooking a steak on a cast iron pan over a fire outdoors, right? How fun is that? How satisfying is that? Winning a championship with Kevin Durant, it's like sous viding a steak and then searing it after it's cooked. In my opinion, there's a time and a place for both. But there is something that's more elemental and satisfying about cooking over a flame and winning with guys that you draft than there is with sous vide and Kevin Durant. You know what I mean? But at the end of the day, hopefully you have a nice, long, healthy life, right? And maybe you don't want to cook over fire every day. Maybe you want a little bit of variety. Sous vide is also a gadget. Gadgets are fun. If you like gadgets, you'll like this. And it allows you to cook something like truly like a master. You'll be like, what top chef made this steak? When you sous vide something with very little effort. Speaking of gadgets, if you sous vide, you can also buy a vacuum sealer to seal stuff before you put it in the sous vide. And that's fun as shit. Every time I vacuum seal something, I feel like I'm watching the best episode of Mr. Rogers ever. It's very satisfying. Very satisfying. So, sous vide. Different. Great. It can't be the only way you cook, but it's a great tool to add to your arsenal. And that's it for our first ever voicemail bag sode. I hope you guys had fun. I had fun. If you want to get in on the next voicemail bag sode, just always be submitting your questions via this number. 929-377-5103. And we'll get it on the air. Now, if you can't call that because of long distance charges or whatever, I'm sorry. I'll try to figure out a way to do that without you having to pay money. This is the best I could do for right now. All right? But you can still send me emails and I'll answer those in future voicemail bag sodes, mail bag sodes, whatever you want. Right? All right. That's it for today's sode. Thank you so much for listening. If you've got a moment, rate us on iTunes. 5 stars only. Don't be a dick. Subscribe to the show if you have not already. Tell your friends about the sensation that is Locked On Knicks if you have not already. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Knicks for bonus takes and general camaraderie. At NBA Injury Report for jokes and jokes and jokes. Be chill to each other. Easier said than done, but please try. Spay and neuter your pets. No excuses. If it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down. Doo-doo stinks. Pee's not that bad. Do your best to help save the planet. Always salt the pasta water. It's your only chance to flavor the pasta itself. And take that, take that, take that for data. Biggie's much better than Common. Drew Steele, come on, what are you talking about? Don't pollute the youth's minds with this garbage. That's it. Peace.